the Peter Brotzmann Chicago Tentet in what I believe is their first recording, the 1-2-3 record. That's Foolish Infinity, a composition by Peter Brotzmann. And as I said earlier, the Tentet consists of 10 of some of the world's finest free jazz musicians, including Joe McPhee on trumpet, Jeb Bishop on trombone, Ken Vandermark on various saxophones and clarinets, Matt Gustafson on tenor and baritone sax, Mars Williams on various saxophones, Peter Brotzmann on more saxophones, Fred Lonberg-Holm on cello, Kent Kessler on bass, and Michael Zarang and Hamid Drake on drums. I'm Chris Comer, the host of this program tonight, and we are speaking with Peter Brotzmann himself. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you very much.
You're playing some gigs regionally this week, and I know that you're in Lexington tomorrow night.
That is true, yes. And we just came from Buffalo, where we spent the weekend, played two concerts. And that is just the beginning of a nearly 3 weeks tour.
Hmm. Well, Peter, a lot of people may have heard, be hearing the Tentet tonight for the first time. And for those listeners, I'd like to take a minute and ask you to explain a little bit about how you started the Tentet and how the group came to be. And why is it a Chicago Tentet and not, you know, from somewhere else?
No, yeah, I mean, the Chicago Tentet is it because I met most of the guys working in the Tentet in Chicago, and the basic is in Chicago, and I used to come for a couple of little gigs during the last 20 years to Chicago, but as you know, in the last, let's say, 10 years, the scene in Chicago is quite developing, and I'm working now since 13 years together with Hamid Drake, for example. He was one of my first guys there, and I learned to know Ken Vandermal, Ken Kessler, all the other guys, Jeb Bishop, and Mars Williams, and so one day we decided, okay, let's get together and play at the usual place. We play there, the Empty Bottle, which is mainly a rock club, but we got a night over there, and so we started with eight, and then Joe passed by, Joe McPhee, and we added him, and so Mats Gustafsson was on his way. So we are the 10, and I must say at the moment we had to change a little bit because Jeb Bishop took a kind of time out because of little ear problems. We changed from Hamid Drake to Paul Nielsen Love, a young man from Norway, as a second drummer. And this time we have we added two other Scandinavian guys, a tuba player Per Åke Holmlander and trumpet player Magnus Bro, which I know from the Scandinavian area, and these guys are playing regularly with Ken Vandermark, Mats Gustafsson, and so on.
Well, the Tentet is one of the most interesting groups I've heard you play with. For those in the know, Peter Brotzmann has recorded with many different groups, many, many sessions. And if you go to a cool record store that's got Peter Brotzmann's records, the section under Peter Brotzmann, there's just too many records to keep track of them all.
Now, so, yeah, I mean, I'm for about 40 years on the road.
Yeah.
So, and there, of course, are some recordings around, yes. But I must say I'm very happy with the Tentet situation, though you can imagine it is not easy to find work for 10 people. But on the other hand, we can't complain. We played most of the major festivals in Europe. We toured here in the U.S. and in Canada, and I hope we can go on for a little while, or maybe even a longer while.
Yeah. Well, let me see if I gather what you're saying. The Tentet started out as sort of a casual thing, and it has gone on to become one of the more satisfying musical endeavors of your career.
Yeah, I mean, when we started, when we got together for the first, second time, we never expected that it would go on for now 7-8 years already. That's a good sign. That's a good sign because the musician want to do it. It has my name for some funny reason. Maybe I'm the oldest beside Joe, and I got the guys together, but I see it more as a kind of community, and I think the social idea of getting 10 guys together and working on the same thing is the main important thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Peter Brotzman here on WAIF. My name is Chris Comer. And if you would like to call in and say hello to Mr. Brotzman and talk about jazz music in the 21st century, feel free to give us a call. The phone number here is 513-961-8900. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the tradition of large ensemble music and jazz. What you do and what you do with the Tentet is not our grandparents' kind of jazz. It's not the kind of, tonal chord progression kind of thing like the Duke Ellington Band or the Benny Goodman Band. But yet there are roots, and I'm sure all kinds of roots in the traditional forms.
Of course, we don't live without the roots, and especially. You mentioned Ellington. I mean, that is one of the best examples in the history of jazz to getting guys together. And Ellington was a guy who kept the ground basic crowd of people together. And but of course, we live in a different time, and we all are. We have to be busy with all kind of smaller groups just to make the living. It's not the time for bigger ensembles anymore because the money is just missing. And the music, of course, changed a lot. It's coming much more to the individual person to add his kind of style to the music. And I think, for example, the way Ellington, for example, put together his band and was writing and thinking for his band, it's so wonderful and so perfect that it doesn't make sense for me to copy, or we just can learn. We learn from Ellington, we can learn from Thelonious Monk, we can learn from Miles Davis, Ornette Coleman. That's a kind of long-term process. And what we have to do is just to find our own way to do it. And so the work of the Tentet varies very much. I mean, the kind of compositions covers a wide range from traditional writing, like Ken Vandermark, for example, prefers for a very open, just a little idea of Fred Lombard Holm, or I do a lot of graphic scores just to get the guys playing, and so. It's really a great variety of compositions, of the way of working, and it's not a problem, but the thing is to get all the things under one hat, as we say in German.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that when you compose, sometimes you present the band with a graphic score. What is a graphic score, and how do you play it?
A graphic score, for example, just motivates the player to start maybe with a little idea, but it motivates him to open it up for himself in the way he thinks it sounds the right way. And it's a kind of process. It's not we are not, I think we are not there to deliver perfect results. Mm-hmm. We are much more interested in the process of making music together. That's what I always was trying to do with my former larger ensembles, which is happening in the smaller ensembles anyway.
Okay. As I mentioned earlier, I'm talking to Peter Brotzman, a world-class jazz saxophonist and composer, and talking about these graphic scores a little more. When you talk about a graphic score, is this something that you do that's similar to what people like Stockhausen or Anthony Braxton present?
Yes and no. I mean, I have hopefully my personal handwriting in that too. And I'm not so interested in doing very complicated things like Stockhausen or my old friend Anthony Braxton is doing. I like the very simple ideas, and I like to give them, hand them over to the musicians, and let them work with that. And the develop fantasy and the cooperation in the band. And that, what I mentioned before, is the process of getting somewhere. That's what interests me most.
Well, I want to ask you another question about the overall sound, not just of the Tentet, but of all your music. If someone was to approach the Peter Brotzman catalog independently for the first time, they would find some music that can be, from time to time, difficult to listen to, loud, sometimes cacophonous, and an older listener or someone with more traditional tastes might not get it. What do you say to people who don't get it, who say, you guys are just blowing and it's crazy and it's blowing my mind? Guys like me, and there are other people who really appreciate what you do, but what do you say to the people who don't get it?
You know, I mean, if you listen, I understand let's say, older people, especially older jazz listeners, have problems with my sound, my phrasing, the way I treat the instrument. But, I mean, look at my favorite tenor players, for example, are still Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young and Sonny Rollins, and it's really a pleasure to have the sound, have the horn vibrating and producing the sound. So sometimes it's very loud, sometimes it's very soft. The funny thing with me is people, I have the image, for some reason, that I'm a loud and brutal player, but if people listen a bit more carefully, they will find a lot of, let's say, softer things in my music, and getting a little older, the softer side is coming a bit more up, in a way.
Yeah. Well, the track we just played a minute ago, called Foolish Infinity from the 1-2-3 record, it ended loud, but it started quiet and it had a lot of dynamics as the piece progressed.
Yes, I mean, you have, especially if you work with a 10-piece band, you have to work with dynamics. And I think dynamics are one of the most important and most interesting things you can reach. I mean, from nearly nothing to a big crescendo, all these things happening in between, it's fun to produce that.
And I can tell that you have fun with the Tentet, because when I listen to the records and when I've seen you perform, and probably tomorrow night when we go down to Lexington to see you perform, the interplay between the band is what makes it fun, isn't it?
That's the main important thing. I mean, the interesting thing will be, we had a couple of days of rehearsals in Buffalo, and after the rehearsal, we decided we forget about the scores. So on this tour, we will try, and you will see that tomorrow, just improvise music made by 10 people, which is a big risk, but I think we are able to handle that.
Do you know the name of the venue you're playing at tomorrow? Because I do not have it in front of me.
I don't have it, I must say. I'm sorry about that.
Let me see. I might have it here somewhere in my stack of stuff. The Downtown Art Center at 141 East Main Street in Lexington, Kentucky, tomorrow night at, says here at 7:30. Somebody else told me 8 o'clock, but let's say 7:30 to make sure.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night in Lexington, Kentucky at the Downtown Art Center, you can catch the Peter Brotzmann Chicago Tentet, also known as the Peter Brotzmann Chicago Swedish Tentet, now that there are some new members.
A little bit, yeah.
I want to ask you some more questions about the Tentet, but we've got a phone call, so how about we go to the phone? If anybody would like to call in and say hello to Peter Brotzmann, the phone number here at WAIF is 513-961-8900. Hello, Aaron, you're on the air with Peter Brotzmann.
Hello, hello. This is quite an honor and a pleasure. So,
hello.
I must interrupt you.
Could you speak a little louder, because the telephone here in the hotel room is a very old one, so I don't hear you.
So, sound off like you got a pair there, Aaron.
Okay. Sorry about that. Normally, I'm too loud screaming in the phone. What I wanted to ask was, I noticed that Mars Williams is not on the current tour or the latest record, and I wondered why not.
Peter, did you hear that? He wants to know, where is Mars Williams?
Yeah, Mars Williams. Mars Williams decided to leave the band last year in Athens when we toured a little bit with the band. Because he wants to go back to his Liquid Soul comrades, and I think, it's a shame, but I think he feels a little bit more familiar in this field of music.
Okay, so he's moving more towards the kind of the funky acid jazz stuff rather than the more free outside stuff you guys were doing.
Chris, could you translate a little bit?
He just concurs with you that sounds like the thing Mars should do. So, do you have any other questions, Aaron?
Oh, no, that was it. I just wondered what happened. I just noticed there was a little change in the lineup, and just curious.
Okay, thanks for calling, Aaron. Stay tuned.
Right. Yeah, thanks for doing it, guys.
We're talking to Peter Brotzmann here on the phone. I'm Chris Comer, and we'll talk to Peter for another 10 or 15 minutes. The phone connection's kind of funky, but we'll give it one more try. If anybody would like to call in, the phone number is 513-961-8900. Peter, tell us a little bit about the other members of the group and their compositional roles. The people you have in the Tentet, including Ken Vandermark and up till recently Mars Williams and Mats Gustafsson, and pretty much all the rest of them are all wonderful composers. They all compose for the various groups that they each lead and participate in. Could you tell me a little?
Yes, I mean, you know the way Ken Vandermark is composing for his smaller groups and for a lot of other bands. So I think he comes from, let's say, a more traditional way of composing. And Mats Gustafsson, he has a lot of Swedish-European influences, so his pieces look a bit different. And Fred Lomberg-Holmes, for example, a very important composer for the Tentet too. He comes more from the, contemporary New York school of music.
Uh-huh.
And so we have a big variety in the range of compositions.
One time when I saw you guys perform as the Tentet in New York, about halfway through the set, one of the guys, and I can't remember who it was, one of the guys splits off the stage. He runs to the back of the room, and he's got a projector back there with different colors on it.
That was Fred Lomberg-Holmes' piece.
Yeah, and it was strange, and it was cool. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a nice way of directing the band. I mean, it's not a very difficult installation. It's just a couple of light bulbs. For the tentet, he fabricated a little box with 10 different light bulbs, and everybody gets a color, and when the color is on, he has to play. And then he gives some directions by other signs or what. And if you have red, green, and blue together, so maybe the three saxophones have to play, and so on and so on. So there are a lot of varieties, and it's an interesting way to perform a piece.
It sounds like it's a way of improvising orchestration.
You can call it like that, yes.
Yeah. Now, sometimes when I listen to your records and when I've seen you play, but especially listening to the records, it's hard to tell where the composition leaves off and the improvisation picks up, which I think is a good thing.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. That's what we want. I mean, we at the end, it would be nice to reach a point where we, even coming on stage with a score, or with an idea, if we can get rid of the score and just play. The score, for me, is just a little stimulation for the band to start playing, to end playing, and what is happening in between. We have our ears, we have our abilities, we can play the instrument, so, and we have a lot of respect for each other. So, actually, this can work even without scores. And that's what we are trying at the moment.
Okay. Again, I'm speaking with Peter Brotzman. Peter is on the road right now with the Peter Brotzman Chicago Tentet, performing tomorrow night in Lexington, Kentucky, at the Downtown Arts Center with a start time at 7:30. If you need any more information on that, feel free to give us a call here at 513-961-8900. Peter, is there any area of musical expression you have yet to explore and something that you may take on in the future when this tour is over and you move on to other things?
The good thing being a jazz musician, you travel, and while traveling you meet always some other interesting musicians. So when this is finished, I go back to Europe. I work with some European guys coming back soon in June and start a little duo tour with a young man, a drummer from New York, Nasheed Waits, who usually plays with Andrew Hill and some other piano players from New York. But we just started a couple of years ago to work together. And so it's always something new to explore. And then if you travel to Japan or other faraway countries, you have the chance to learn a lot about other people's music, and that's a very, very good thing.
We're going to wrap things up here in a minute, mostly because I want to play some more records before we run out of time tonight. We'll be here until midnight tonight, at which time Lee Harvey will take over with the Outside Inside Jazz program, one of the finest jazz programs in the Midwest. So, Peter, if you're up late tonight, keep listening to 88.3, because you'll want to hear what Lee Harvey has to play after midnight tonight.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be playing your records up until then, and you've heard those already.
Okay.
All right. But, you know, before we wrap things up, I want to take a look back at your career and just ask you a few things that interest me. And I don't want to be completely selfish about it, which is why I've opened up the phone lines if anyone wants to call in and say hello to Peter Brotzman at 513-961-8900. But when you first started coming out in the 60s, and I've got some of these older records like Machine Gun and Nipples and some of these other older records you did, and you played with a lot of interesting characters back in those days, people like Hon Benick and Derek Bailey, and those are all musicians that have been of interest to me. Who were some of your early influences that gave you the idea to develop your big sound? And on these old records, you definitely have a big sound.
Yeah, I don't know. I mentioned already before Coleman Hawkins. I saw him live two times, I saw, when I was a very young man, I saw Sidney Bechet a couple of times. And, I saw all the great players working a lot in Europe when I was about 16, 18, 20 years old. And then I was very early, very interested in guys like Eric Dolphy. I had the pleasure to meet him once. He played when he was touring with Charles Mingus. He played in my hometown, and so we had a chance to hang out together after the concert.
Mm-hmm.
And Ornette, of course, I've seen a lot of times in Europe with various groups. All that people, Charles Mingus for us young men at that time, because it was such a strong and dynamic music, was very important. But other people like Roland Kirk, for example, just to mention four or five names. I mean, there's such a lot. And the other influence, you know, when my other little career is I studied the art. I studied painting and graphics. And through that, I had a lot of other information about the art. And it was a little bit easier for me to forget about rules in jazz music. You know, when I started to play the saxophone, the clarinet, it was the time of the hard bop, and it was, as much as I love Art Blakey, Horace Silver, and all the guys, but it was a little bit too strict, and I was a little bit more into Cage and Stockhausen, early Stockhausen, and Namjoon Paik, a Korean artist who started as a musician. I had the chance to work with him even for some months. So that was the other side of influence. So I could combine a lot of things. I could forget about jazz rules, jazz harmonics, and scales. I could do something else.
That's interesting to me. You mentioned a lot of people who I'm familiar with, and it makes sense to me now that if you were listening to all those cats, how you developed your own unique sound out of some influence from those individuals. But you did not mention Pharoah Sanders or Albert Eiler, and those are two other guys from the 60s who had a very big sound. The closest I would come to the Peter Brotzman sound, although yours is, of course, a very unique sound.
Yeah, I mean, Albert Eiler, I mean, when I started the first, let's say, professional concert and career a little bit, Albert was working in Europe too. And at that time, the first ESP records came over. And, of course, it was for me very, very interesting to see that there is a man from the other side of the world trying to do similar things without knowing each other. We started to handle the horn a little bit different from the classical way, and we developed a little bit in the same direction. And then a bit later I had a chance to see Albert Eiler at different times in Europe, which of course was a big impression. I've seen Coltrane and various groups in the Miles Davis band. I've seen the Quartet. I've seen Archie Chapp with the famous concert he did in Germany in Donaueschingen with two trombone players, mm-hmm. Roswell and Gretchen Moncure, and so on. So there was, at that time, I think we had the chance to get more information maybe in Europe about the new players and the new music than you might have been here in the States.
You know, some people might say, you know, those guys in Europe didn't get to see as much jazz as we do because it's an American art form. But you know what? All the American jazz players seem to always get more gigs in Europe than they do in America anyway.
Yeah, I think especially in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, I think they were, especially the new guys like Ornette or Albert, they were much more accepted in Europe than they were here in their own country, I have the feeling. When I talked with Dolphy, for example, about that, he said, yeah, that's it, sure. And another thing, we can talk about money. The money was much better in Europe than in the States.
Mm-hmm. Is that been your experience as well with your own career and your own recordings? That have you been more successful in Europe than you have been in America?
You know, as a European and as a German, it was not so easy to get recognized and get accepted. But on the other hand, I must say, my first people who helped me were some American musicians. There was Don Cherry and Steve Lacy.
Mm-hmm.
And even Lee Konitz said, hey, Bretzmann, do your thing, go. At the same time, all the guys in Germany, my colleagues, my later colleagues, they were laughing when I showed up. So my connections to American music, American musicians, started very early, and I won't miss it. And successful, I don't know. I mean, you have to love what you are doing, and you do it either in Europe, in the States. I must say, I'm really very, very glad and happy about the acceptance of my music and our music here in your country. It's growing, it's getting more and more, and I feel very, very, I like to be here, and I like to work with all these great musicians.
Wasn't it Don Cherry who coined the phrase machine gun to describe your music?
No, it was a nickname he gave me.
Okay. I read that somewhere in a magazine or something.
Yeah, he invited me when he was playing with that quintet with Gato Barbieri and Carl Berger and Aldo Romano in Paris at the Chucky Besh. He invited me for a week, and I was playing as much, and as I went on stage with very shaky knees, I remember.
Uh-huh.
But Don always was such a great, great help, and he opened up for me really the scene in Europe. And the same to say about Steve Lacy.
Let me say something about Steve Lacy here. The first time I saw you was 4 or 5 years ago. I was on a business trip for the day job. I was in Chicago, and being on a business trip for the day job can be a real drag. But I got one of those Chicago readers, and I was looking for something to do one night, and it said there was a free concert at one of these galleries downtown Chicago. Steve Lacy and Mal Waldron would be playing for free.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes,
so
I've been at the concert. Yes.
Yeah, well, I went to the concert. I got there a little late, and the place was pretty packed, but I sat down up front, right in front of the piano, and I saw these guys play, and it was a fantastic set.
It
was over, I saw you, and I recognized you only from seeing your picture in some magazines, and I said to somebody, I said, is that Peter Brotzmann? And they're like, yeah, that's him. That's him.
I was there, yes.
So anyway, that was a fantastic concert. I'm sure you've seen Steve Lacy more times than I have, but and it's too bad now that both Steve and Mal have passed away.
That's true.
Would you like to make any comments about those two individuals?
Steve, from the very beginning, was very open. He was so helpful, especially for me in a time nobody took me serious. But he did, and Don Cherry did. Mel, you know that he used to live for quite some years in Germany, in Munich, and so I had a chance to see him quite often. But we never came too close. But as musicians, as persons in jazz history, they have their place, for sure.
For sure. Well, it's been fantastic talking to you, Peter Brotzmann. I hope we get a chance to do it again sometime because there are so many aspects of your career that we could not touch on in one brief radio program.
Especially, if you like, we can do that.
I'm sure we will. We got to leave some time to play some records, don't we? I mean, that, after all, that's what it's really about. So thanks again to Peter Brotzmann for taking the time to talk to myself, Chris Comer, and our listening audience in Cincinnati. The Peter Brotzmann Chicago Tentet will be performing in Lexington, Kentucky tomorrow night at the Downtown Art Center, 141 East Main Street. It says here it starts at 7:30, so let's pretend like it really does, and let's all get there by 7:30 and enjoy the set again tomorrow night in Lexington,
okay.
Kentucky.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Peter, and we will close out with a track from Images, the Peter Brotzmann Chicago Tentet, and a composition by Ken Vandermark called All Things Being Equal. Do you have anything to say about this composition before I spin it?
That would be take a little bit too much time.
Right.
The images are just a little series of images I found and made myself, and we organized them a little bit. And no, it's not a big deal, but we just try to play some little images.
Okay. This is All Things Being Equal by Ken Vandermark, the Peter Brotzmann Chicago Tentet.
Okay, thanks a lot.